shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. The freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new.
Good evening and welcome to Aman Law, 1 hour of African current affairs brought to you in English and sometimes French here on CQUT 90.3 FM, CQUT.ca around the world. And we have a full show for you, but before Doug tells you what's in line, we just want to thank everybody who made donations. My goodness, and they will all be individually thanked through the course of the show, but we had sort of secretly to ourselves set a limit of $600 thinking, we're not going to make as much because of COVID. We surpassed it. We raised $1,480. So we love our listeners so much. And clearly some of you guys love us too. So we just wanted to start with that. But back to business. So Doug, you were kind of solo this week. What do you have lined up for us?
Well, just to repeat what you said about, I'm humbled by the support and thank you so much.
It's a major wow.
Yes. Last week, you and I were at the anti-racist rally for in support of the Asian community, mm-hmm. and lo and behold, beside us was a contingent of Haitians who had just come from Marc Garneau's office, where they were protesting against Canada's continued involvement in preventing democracy and freedom and development coming to Haiti, and so I connected with one of the leadership people. His name is Franz André, and we talked today about the nature of their struggle and the various campaigns they're leading and what they're trying to demand out of Canada. And then it has been getting really frantic. The news out of Africa, there's so much happening all over the continent, but I focused on two spots. One is Mozambique, where it's just wow. Mozambique has not been able to keep up with what's going on there. I'm trying to get through to our people who can give us a really deep analysis, but for the moment what I've done is I've done a couple of clips from News TV down in South Africa. They look at it back to back. One just talks about the events and then the other is an analysis, so they'll play and then I'll introduce the other later more fully. But it's about the death of Magufuli. President John Pombe Magufuli died 2 weeks ago, but how? Of COVID, although, of course, there's going to be strong denial forever on that one. But one of Africa's major deniers of the COVID and all of its implications has himself then suffered from death from it. And so that's it. Stay tuned to Amanda.
Musique ça, titre là c'est Haïti.
Haïti, Haïti, Haïti. Jardin a vidi la joie pousser. Et puis n'a créé désolé, Haïti belle passe la ligne, conviction c'est que moi m'aime. Haïti au bâti maman, Haïti au bâti boubou, Haïti belle passe solé, Haïti belle passe la ligne, conviction c'est que moi m'aime. La vie sous la terre litre, mister, 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 l'amour la vie bouille non seul temps, mister, mister, mister. Yon se lève, yon se citron, yon se yon, yon se mouton, yon bagen mi mission ni mi mission. Fouye son en kalalou pou ka kone, marchi se toute pou gen pou mene, ke le saint soleil dit l'ou engage. Pou koufine kouvri ou fè engage. La vie me se ple onas, oui me se jonas, deja pananas, pa ka fe bas, ki a se ka fe mgas, pa ka refize li Haiti men. Ki o das, deja pananas, la vie pa mwen das, mwen pa jou l'espas, mwen bezon ti plas, mwen la fe mwen mas. Haïti belle passe la ligne, conviction c'est que moi m'aime. Haïti oh belle maman, Haïti oh belle boubou, Haïti belle passe solé, Haïti belle passe la ligne, conviction c'est que moi m'aime. Haïti oh, Haïti oh. Haïti oh. Haïti belle passe solé, Haïti belle passe la ligne, conviction c'est que moi m'aime.
I'm here this evening with Franz André, who I met at a rally for anti-discrimination, anti-racism rally against Asians. And we met there. Franz André is from Haiti. I'm from the Amandla radio show about Africa. And we realized, oh, we got so much to talk about. In particular, Amandla has been following how Canada has been interfering in African affairs via the so many ways, but particularly with mining and other interests. And Haiti is having a very great big problem with Canada right now, and that's what their rally was all about, protesting in front of Mark Garneau's office about Canadian interference in Haiti. So Franz, welcome to Amandla. It'd be wonderful to get to know who you are at first. And could you just tell us a little bit your story and how you got involved in the politics of opposition in Haiti?
Well, good evening, Doug. Thank you for welcoming me in your show. And hello to all you listeners. Well, I'm a son of Haiti. I was born, strangely enough, I don't look it perhaps, but I was born in 1955, just before that Papa Doc, François Duvalier, came in power in 1957. My dad was a singer. Actually, got to raise four kids, singing all his life. He was known under the name of Joe Trouillot, and just before the election. My dad was actually supporting the opposition leader, which was Desjoie. And of course, he was, composing music, writing music for Desjoie. And just before the election, went to Italy. He had a contract in Italy. And when he came back, Duvalier was in power. And that's when they challenged him on the fact that he was supporting the opposition. That's where everything started. And finally, 4 years down the road, he had to leave the country because his life was in danger. And so he ended up living with my mom, And for the four kids, we stayed back home with an uncle, which was being arrested, you know, many times over. And twice I'm the one who woke him up to be arrested and put in one of those oil drums into a truck, a military truck, and he disappeared for 2 weeks. My aunt ended up having to pay at the time $10,000 US. We talk in 1961.
Oh my goodness.
Sorry. Yeah, a lot of money. And I don't mind saying it. She had to go and see one of those people that supported Duvalier. And just to show a little bit of the pain that the child of 5 or 6 years old, you know, I think she ended up sleeping with him also.
That's such a...
About 10,000 US.
The worst kind of corruption.
That's correct. And so the way she came back, I knew something else happened. It was not only a matter of giving $10,000, but, you know, the way she looked, something happened. We never spoke about it. But as a son that of my mother, who is very intuitive, that's the way as I saw it happening. So, you know, fighting injustice started very early. Very, very early, because I've seen so many things happening, people being beat up by a military and being killed right in front of me, you know, getting out of school. My uncle, you know, being arrested and being a very strong, what do we call home, you know, Métis, but we call him mulatto, very strong, you know, black hair man. He came back, you know, teeth broken, gray hairs. So those are things, you know, tell you something is wrong here. So finally, sorry, in 1965, my parents ended up getting us out of the country. And it happened at 7 o'clock at night. We were in, you know, already PJs, and they said, okay, kids, let's go. You're leaving Haiti. And that's where we were put in a plane and up to New York in PJs. At the time there is no ramps getting into the airport, so we had to go on the tarmac. We're talking November 10th, and as always remember, 1965, you know, we had to go down on the tarmac and walk to the airport. So just putting you in perspective, you know, how I kept doing what I'm doing, because we went through that injustice and being brought in a country which is a beautiful country, but you can imagine leaving Haiti in November and getting it in Canada. So, you know, that was something like, you know, yes, I was happy to see mom and dad, but at the end of the day, that was a shock.
It's almost a cruel and inhuman punishment coming in November to Canada.
So,
Clearly, you've had the history of Haiti deep inbred in yourself and your sense of injustice and social justice. When I met you, you were part of the group that was now standing out front of Marc Garneau's offices. What's the connection now?
Okay, the group is called Solidarité Québec Haïti. This is a group that we formed in 2018. And that was in the period of what they call the Petro-Caribe Challenge. Maybe some of you listeners know about the Venezuela actually had given Haiti a special program buying oil at a very, very low advantage, where they actually were asking only 60% of the cost to be paid within 30 days, I believe. And the 40% was a loan at 1% interest up to 25 years. And the idea was to rebuild infrastructure, social program, you know, whatever. And that didn't happen. So the most of the money was being spent at the time, just slightly after the earthquake in January 12, 2010. And who came in power is Martelly, Michel Martelly, who's known to be Sweet Mickey. He was chosen by the United States, Canada, France to be the president at the time, and that's where most of the reconstruction money, which was over of $6 billion, at times we were talking even $11 billion, were being spent, not really to rebuild the country. And who was in charge of that reconstruction was Bill Clinton, was put in the position of managing the reconstruction by nobody else than Obama, Barack Obama.
Oh, yes.
And I feel that was a way to pay back Bill Clinton to the fact that Hillary Clinton were not the one to be elected, because something happened during the campaign and Hillary had to take a step back for Obama to came power. So I think it was a way to bring back the elevator to Bill Clinton. So a lot of money were being spent and got voted to not doing what is supposed to be done. And that's where there was a protest in Haiti about when they were trying to raise the price of oil, of fuel. And there were a lot of protests, and that's where our group was actually formed to echo what was being done in Haiti.
And so despite all those billions of dollars, nothing had really changed for the people on the ground in Haiti. And yet the...
None whatsoever.
And yet the group of whatever it is, the group of 184 that was installed in power when they chased, when the Americans and Canadians chased Aristide out of power, are still there and still controlling mm-hmm. it. Is that...
Yes, and I think for your listener, we need to talk a little bit about Aristide. Aristide was the first president elected democratically by over 70% of the population voted. And that is high number. Normally, you don't have 70% of the population that voted. So we end up getting 90% of that 70%. Okay. However, Aristide was also a priest. He was a priest. And he was the only one, and up to now, who asked for friends, who was the one that colonized Haiti, who asked for friends to pay back, okay, to pay back the debt that was imposed to Haiti slightly after the independence. Haiti, the Haitians, the slaves, actually won a battle against the strongest army at the time, which was the Napoleon's army. So somehow they say, okay, listen, it's either you pay to the colon, the people that had to leave the land. It's either you pay or we're going to come back and actually take back the country once again. So we end up paying for 100 years, we end up paying what's worth today $21 billion of a debt. So right after the independence, embargoes came. The American actually invaded Haiti for 19 years, 1915 to 1934. So I'm putting that in perspective just to see what happened to Aristide, where Canada got involved. So Aristide was elected. He had the first coup in 1991. He was brought back in 1994. He was reelected again in 2002, I believe. And suddenly, someone called Denis Coderre and Denis Paradis, they actually arranged for a meeting here in Canada, in fact, in Quebec, in Mitch Lake. And actually, the only people that were there were not Asians, they were French, Americans, and Canadian. And that's when they decided that Haiti deserved a different president. So February 29th, 2004, they went in Haiti. The first army that was in the tarmac at the airport in Haiti was the Canadian Army. The Special Forces American came, went to president, Mr. Aristide, and actually sent him to Central Africa. So that will give you a bit of since when Canada has been involved in our politics in Haiti. And this is why our group, Solidarité Québec-Haïti, has been pressuring the Canadian government to get out of that of Haiti.
And our for our listeners, there's an excellent film out called Haiti Betrayed, which is has both English and French versions, and it can be found under exactly that website, haitibetrayed.com, and you can rent it there on Vimeo. It's an excellent, from my view, an excellent background to many of the things you've just been talking about. So what were the demands at the rally then that you were having on both last week, Sunday, and this week, Monday?
Just to go back a little bit, Michel Martelly, who was elected in 2011, actually cosmetically used that money, the Petro-Caribe money and the construction money, to do some cosmetic changes. Let's not remember, we need to remember that 70% of the Haitian population are 35 years old and less. So they don't know the dictatorship. Yes. They don't know about Duvalier. They don't know what it was. So they hear, you know, it was great during the Duvalier era. And I know the Duvalier era was not as good. You know, the people were scared. I mean, we were hiding in a home. So yes, Duvalier took over a previous president that did a lot for the country, you know, did some wonderful things for infrastructure. For many years, he actually kept it in a way where, you know, it was a perception that he's done something, but all he did was, because so people were so afraid, he maintained what he got. He's inherited from Estimé, the previous president. So Martelly, all he did was cosmetic, pruning that, you know, Duvalier was better, under Duvalier, the country was better. That's at the same time that Jean-Claude Duvalier came back to Haiti. Jean-Claude Duvalier, it was a son called Baby Doc, had to flee in 1986 because the population said, get out. And he did, up to 2011, where actually money took him back in Haiti. So from 2011 to 2016, Martelly brought a new president called Jovenel Moïse, who's been now since 2016. And actually right now, Haiti is like a civil war where we have gangs actually being sustained by the president, the oppositions, and the oligarchy, you know, people that actually benefiting from, you know, the having a monopoly of food coming in and, you know, everything in there. So right now there's even a federation of gangs that are actually interrogating with Jovenel Moïse. And this is what we're calling a new dictatorship. This is the Duvalier third edition.
This is reinvention of the Tonton Macoute, the famous brutal paramilitary force that terrorized the Haitian population. Awful. This That's is awful. Correct. And Canada's still at it, still working to keep the popular will out. We saw how La Cité, the population there is such an independent-minded people, and at every turn they're attacked and oppressed and put down, and whenever they come up to, so my goodness gracious, I no wonder you folks are angry right now, and I fully support what you're doing. Where to now with the groups here in Montreal, and where, how do you feel things should happen?
Well, we're asking the Canadian government to get out of what they call the core group, C-O-R-E. If you search for a core group, you'll find there's 9 countries that are involved right now, and they are the one who's choosing who's going to be president in Haiti. And they've been doing it at least in 2004. We need to remember also we were actually occupied since 2004 after Denis Coderre, after Denis Paradis, you know, went and created that coup. We had a group called MINUSTAH, which was a Onusian group that actually are still in some ways in Haiti. Yeah. What we're asking to Mr. Trudeau is to get out of that core group that's been actually choosing president and are still, sustaining or still, you know, supporting Jovenel Moïse, which is no longer president because since based on the constitution, February 7th just passed, he was supposed to be out of, you know, as a president, but he's still holding you know, it's still saying, and Canada is supporting Jovenel Moïse and suggesting they should be having a free and democratic election, which is never going to happen. All the previous elections were more selection of president than election of president. So what we ask is, say, get out of Haiti, let the population, which actually right now have been rallying and manifesting since at least 2018, since that issue of the Petro Challenger, let the population choose who's going to be the next president. It's not going to be easy. You know, there might be a lot of people who's going to die, but at least we'll know we owning our destiny in our hands.
Well, and that's, I mean, for that matter, the very popular president, Aristide, is he's still not allowed back, is he?
No, actually, Aristide came back slightly after Jean-Claude Duvalier came. Aristide came back in May 2011.
Because,
Jean-Claude Duvalier came in January, came back to Haiti. And Aristide, actually, he was actually a senator in the States. Who actually flew, she actually rented the plane, went to Central Africa, and brought him back to Haiti. So Aristide's been in hiding, but not in hiding, I would say more like a close house since then. But he has built a university, which is probably the only real, if I can say, university, and he's doing great work, you know, even though he's not exposing himself to Jovenel Moïse.
Wow, just an amazing story and a very difficult one too. And yeah.
Yes, just a last word. We have a group, Solidarité Québec Haïti. We started a petition last year, a year ago, and the petition has been deposed by the Bloc Québécois, Mario Beaulieu, on the 22nd, like a week ago. So the Canadian government has 45 days to respond. And what we're asking, we want the Canadian government to disclose all the documents that brought to the coup against Jean-Bertrand Aristide. So, you know, stay tuned. We want to see what the Canadian government's going to do with this.
As we say in the struggle of Southern Africa, a luta continua.
That's right. Thank you very much again, Doug.
Thank you. And well, all our solidarity goes out to you and the Haitian community fighting this brave struggle.
Welcome back to Amama here on CQT 90.3 FM. And I always like to remind our listeners to check out our blog where we post the best of Amandla. And that has a nice little elegant new name. It's simply amandla.ca. So very easy to remember, very easy to access. So yes, it's been fundraising at CKUT. CKUT, our darling and valiant station, has really been kicked not once but twice by COVID because it had to cancel the funding drive last year. And then to top it off, much of CKUT's non-funding drive source of income is through performance venues. And of course, they've all been closed under COVID. So it's been tough for this station, and they decided fairly late in the game this year, got to do a funding drive, even if, you know, people will just give what they can and the whole thing. So in the 11th hour, Amandla kind of got organized, and we, you know, sent out our letters to known listeners and supporters and did our pitch last week on the show. And lo and behold, we had set our own personal goal of $600, half of what we usually make, thinking it's COVID, times are tough, purse strings are tightly shut. We don't want to overly harass our supporters and listeners. And we raised $1,480.
So, oh my gosh. Are you kidding?
I am not. So yes, I've had to pinch myself a couple of times. So that's what's happened. And we are so overjoyed and so thrilled by the support. So here we go. I want to thank the people who made donations. And there may be some of you out there who are still planning on doing it. Please do. But here are the people we would like to thank. Yassine Mansard, Ahmed Lowe, Chimamwe Miller. I wonder if he's related to Doug Miller.
And used to be a contributor to the show.
Yes. Avi Kanji, another former contributor to the show.
Absolutely.
Who has subsequently gone on to become a physician. Rhonda Lee down in the States. Our very own Douglas Miller related to Chimamwe Miller. Is that Doug related to you, Doug?
There might be one. There might be one.
Okay. Guy Quinn, the wonderful Feroz Manji, who, my goodness, not only did he make a financial contribution, but he has made such a huge content contribution to the show over the year with his amazing sprawling series called Organizing in the Times of COVID. So just fantastic that he also ponied up some cash for us. Natasha DeCruz.
Oh, man, tremendous.
Yes. Prakash Panangadin, I think I mispronounced his last name, but a wonderful, generous contribution from Prakash. Karen Runnels and Jerry and Brisna. Kaksa Jiro, I also think I killed that last name. Anyway, it's so wonderful. Wow. We are deeply moved.
We are.
And galvanized to continue what we do, and we continue to think it's important. And clearly we have people out there who think so too. So $1,480 from those wonderful people. And again, for those of you who've been thinking about making a donation, it's not too late. Go on to cqt.ca and it's super easy online to make a donation. And I will quickly pull up the number of where CKUT is at in terms of its own goals. We'll take a little break, and when we say bye-bye, I'll tell you where the station is at in terms of its own fundraising goals.
And 1,480, I know for a fact that another contributor, an old friend, David Beer, has committed to sending us money at the end of the month. He's a retiree and was waiting for his pension to come in. So when he sends it, we will beat 1,500, no problem. And so exciting.
Yay! Thank you all.
I can't thank you enough. It's really gratifying to know that there's people out there who think that what we do is useful. Aye. Well, listen, Gwen, I'm just going to move on to the news again. And we have followed the situation in Mozambique for a long time now. Our friend Uli Gerstad has brought us the news. We've followed what's going on in the northern part of Mozambique in Cabo Delgado. Well, it has blown up enormously over the last week. And so the ISIS-affiliated Islamic movement up there basically has been out in the rural areas, has really gone straight for the heart of the exercise in the urban areas. They're not big urban areas, but that's where the petrochemical chemicals are located with the liquefied gas projects. Total, the French organization, is the major one. And boy, did they come on ferociously. It was quite an attack, actually. Thousands of people have fled into the bush and started to cross the border into Tanzania and into fleeing the whole area altogether.
And so a bunch of people showed up in boats and ferried them away to the best of their abilities. I mean,
oh yeah, those who couldn't escape into the bush actually swam out into the ocean, hoping to climb on any boat they could get on.
There were a lot of boats that came and, you know, did their best to try to rescue them. There was quite an, you know, unorganized, impromptu rescue operation by all different types of vessels out there in the Indian Ocean.
So I hope to do a much more full background and analysis next week if I can get the feedback from the people I'm looking for. But for the moment, what I've done is I've got from ETV down in South Africa News two clips that I'm going to play, and they'll bring us up to date on what's going on. First, the events, and then secondly, a bit of an analysis from the Security and Intelligence Council of South Africa. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be back thereafter with more news.
Ringing the alarm bells over Mozambique's security crisis. Human Rights Watch called on the international community to step up efforts to combat the country's Islamist insurgency after the capture of the northern town of Palma by jihadist militants on Saturday.
It is time now for the Southern African Development Community to treat this as a priority, and also for the Mozambican authorities to tell the world what is happening and what kind of help is needed.
The raid on Palma was the latest in a series of attacks in the gas-rich region of Cabo Delgado. The northern province holds vast coal and gas deposits, as well as major offshore oil reserves. It's also one of two regions where a majority of the population is Muslim, in a traditionally Christian country. Over the past decade, several foreign multinationals such as Total and ExxonMobil have invested massively in the exploitation of Cabo Delgado's resources, including with a $20 billion project to extract liquefied natural gas, known as the LNG plant. But these projects have become prime targets for jihadist militants who launched an insurgency in 2017. Driven by religious grievances as well as widespread poverty and inequalities, a rebel group known as Al-Shabaab launched a series of brutal attacks against government targets and civilians in Cabo Delgado. In 2019, the group pledged allegiance to the Islamic State organization, and in 2020, it twice managed to capture the strategic northern port city of Mocimboa da Praia. Despite making security its top priority and enlisting the help of foreign powers and mercenaries, the Mozambican government has struggled to cope with the insurgency. Some 2,600 people have already been killed in the violence since 2017, and another 700,000 have been forced to flee their homes, according to the United Nations.
With this, dozens of people who were trapped in northern Mozambique after an attack by insurgents have reportedly been freed. About 180 people have said to have been trapped in a hotel in the town of Palmas. Violence that began on Wednesday intensified on Friday, with at least 7 people killed. News 24 is reporting that evacuations by boat of more than 1,200 people, among them South Africans, began earlier on Sunday. But it is believed that more than 100 people are still missing. Security analysts believe the insurgent attack in Palma in Mozambique marks a significant turning point in the conflict. ENCA's Barry Bateman has got this report.
The fighting in Cabo Delgado has left thousands of Mozambicans dead. But the insurgency has mostly been in rural areas. Now, the country's financial interests and those of multinationals are under severe threat.
But the significance is it's targeted the town, which is essentially the central hub, the mainstay of Mozambique's liquefied natural gas project, which is assessed to bring the country in billions of revenue. And we also know that it is the hub where foreign multinational oil companies and those that have been contracted to these groups have centered all of the employees, the infrastructure.
Cummings believes this latest escalation marks a turning point.
We know in the lead up to this offensive, which actually occurred, just a few days, if not hours, after the United States designated the Al-Sunnah Network and their leadership as formal extremist organizations, that there is going to be a much more significant focus on this insurgency and possible intervention.
Willem Els from the Institute for Security Studies agrees.
It will be a turning point because I think the international community's eyes will be focused more on the area now. I also believe that there will be a lot of pressure from the investors on the government of Maputo to make more decisive and actions and also to intervene more decisively.
Al says the regional and international community must cooperate to help Mozambique bring an end to the fighting. But he says the solution is not at the end of a barrel of a gun.
Purely military intervention or solution has never worked to counter these people. We need a holistic approach that will, at the end of the day, address the grievances of the people, address the causes, the root causes of why these people are there, why they are not happy. People will not fight if they are not angry. These people are angry, and we need to address that anger.
Pretoria has so far adopted quiet diplomacy on fears that helping our neighbors could result in Islamist attacks on home soil. The escalation and the possible deaths of South African citizens could change that. Barry Bateman, Pretoria.
Welcome back to Amamwa here on CKUT and 90.3 FM in Montreal, CKUT.ca around the world. We're not going to bother with the weather report because our listeners are from
all over the world. There's weather out there.
Do they really care what's happening in Montreal right now? But the plants are blossoming. Let's put it that way. We're into spring. I was able to determine that CKUT has raised an astounding $30,000. So,
oh, wow.
Lots of people showing their love for CKUT these days and keep bringing it on.
That's amazing. Gwen, the other thing that happened actually, it's almost 2 weeks ago now when the president of Tanzania died, John Pombe Magufuli. And the listeners may remember that I've covered probably the last year and a half. I didn't spend a lot of time before on his reign, I guess we could call it. But this last, since he's got last elected and the period leading up to it, have really, really been a different form of government in Tanzania, mm-hmm. and truly tragically, it's led to quite a split. A lot of people really into what he was doing. They were so fed up, particularly with the corruption, that they followed him very blindly. But he was on to so many bad things. In any case, he passed away after being a major COVID denier, and he caught it. Several of his ministers died, and he has died of it. Mm. There's a new, his vice president has taken over, and she is from Zanzibar, and is quite an unknown factor. So I've got three clips, one from the news, they're all from the Kenya news. One talks about the events and is a critique by Tundu Lissu, our friend, the former opposition leader who had to flee into exile after he lost the election this year. And then another by a former member of parliament who is also in exile and who was also interviewed and very much more critical and analytical about what was going on. And then finally, a review of who is the new Samia mm-hmm. Suluhu, who has taken over as the vice president, as now president of Tanzania, Tanzania's first woman president. And well, in this case, one of the three or four of Africa ever. So stay tuned now for more background on what's going on in Tanzania and the death of John Pombe Magufuli.
News.
Elsewhere, Tanzanian opposition leader Tundu Lissu has termed the death of President Magufuli as an opportunity for a new beginning for the country. Lissu, who unsuccessfully contested against him in the last elections, says it is now time for Tanzania to liberate itself from what he described as the yoke of dictatorship and oppression. Here's KTN News senior political reporter Chris Thairu with that report.
For the past couple of days, Tanzanian opposition leader Tundu Lissu has literally been a one-man army, using social media as his ammunition to blast through the walls of silence that had been erected by the Tanzanian authorities over the whereabouts and well-being of President Magufuli. And finally, he got the answer he had been craving with the confirmation of the president's death.
I have received news of President Magufuli's passing without any surprise, to be honest. I had expected this all along. From the first day I tweeted on March 7th, on Sunday of last week, when I asked the question, where is President Magufuli and what is his state of health?
The opposition leader, who survived a gun attack after his vehicle was sprayed with bullets, some hitting his lower body, insists the government was being less than forthright when it came to the cause of Magufuli's death.
Even now that he's dead, his government continues to lie. Magufuli died of corona. That is one. Number two, Magufuli did not die this evening. I have information from basically the same sources which told me that he was gravely ill. I have information that Magufuli has been dead since Wednesday of last week.
So is he ready now to return home?
Of course I'll go back to Tanzania, but my going is part of what I'm calling for. My return, and not just mine. There are many others who are in exile. Others are in Kenya. They came to Kenya 2 days ago, I'm told. It is time for all Tanzanians to sit together to account for all the evils of these past 5 years, because you cannot have reconciliation without truth.
According to Tundu, international relations and diplomatic ties have been hurt by Magufuli's type of leadership.
This is an opportunity, a very rare opportunity, for national reconciliation, which had been made impossible by President Magufuli. This is the time to return back to the drawing boards in order to give our country a new constitutional and political order, which was thwarted by Magufuli's predecessor, President Kikwete, 7 years ago.
Lissu's sentiments differed from some of the country's citizens, who eulogized Magufuli as a leader who put the country's interests first. Chris Dairo, KTN News.
The opposition leader Tundu Lissu and former member of parliament Godbless Lema are among the leaders who have passed through hell during the late John Pombe Magufuli's reign as the president of Tanzania. They do have until now sought refuge overseas, awaiting sanity in their country. Through their lawyer George Wajakoya, the two leaders, despite not wishing Magufuli's death, they recalled the atrocities they underwent during his regime.
The man had become a tyrant. I have no good words for him now that he's dead. I don't really care. People can say what they want to say. Yes, we are religious people, but where somebody has done mayhem, he has to be condemned to his grave.
Tundu Lissu and Godbless Lema were forced to flee their country following deadly threats allegations.
By the pain and scars that this man had inflicted on those who are still alive, especially and particularly the presidential candidate, the former presidential candidate whom I spoke to this morning, he has no worries at all. He says, yes, Tanzanians will mourn, the person has died, but the maiming of Tanzanians, including the leader in exile, you want me to tell you that he should be celebrating Magufuli's death, or he should be celebrating his own pain? Pain that was inflicted by this man and his cronies.
Speaking to Ebro TV exclusively, Wajakoya advises his clients not to step foot in Tanzania until sanity returns.
The system did not change, so it will be very risky for them, and I will advise them as their lawyer that it will be very recent. And as we speak now, 4 top politicians were in my office yesterday seeking asylum. Today, and they will find you here. Yeah, here. This is covered in the newspapers today. And as we speak today at 4, 2 more are coming, very prominent and evident politicians who are still being tortured. Regardless of whether Magufuli is dead or not dead, of course he's dead, the situation in Tanzania has gone into the worst.
Magufuli died early this week of heart complications, but his critics maintain the president might have died of COVID-19, which he gave a deaf ear in mainstreaming safety measures to curb the spread of the virus.
He actually planned his own death by defying logic, telling people not to wear masks. Come on, can we really sympathize with the guy who went beyond logic? Can we say that we are sorry he died? Let him be sorry for himself for killing himself.
Already Samia Suluhu, the then vice president, has been sworn in as the sixth and the first female president of Tanzania, having confidence of implementing the agenda left by her predecessor, John Pombe Magufuli.
She's one of the best from my own analysis, and she's a woman who was put there by Magufuli for purposes of that he only knows, and those cronies that have been around him. But let's give her a chance. Let us see how she'll come out. But I'm strictly informed by the Chadema leadership that no matter what they do, the system has not changed. It's now up to her to go back into a recollection closet and ask herself, what is it that has been wrong that has led to this?
Samia now becomes the second female president in East Africa after Sylvie Kinigi of Burundi. Reporting for Ebru TV, I'm Jeff Khaemba.
Samia Suluhu to become the first female president of the United Republic of Tanzania begins. We'll give it to you here on KTN News Center. But then the death of Tanzania's President John Pombe Magufuli opens a new chapter for a country that has never changed governments outside of elections. According to the Tanzanian constitution, the vice president takes over the remainder of the term. With just 5 months into her second term, it means Vice President Samia Suluhu will become the first female president of Tanzania and the first female head of state in the East Africa community. But who is Samia Suluhu? The Vice President of Tanzania, Ashley Mazuri, looks at her profile.
To many, she would pass off as soft-spoken. But the 61-year-old Vice President of the United Republic of Tanzania, who is not new to public office, is a woman of several firsts.
Mimi, Samia Suluhu Hassan, naapa kwamba nitakuwa mwaminifu kwa Jamhuri ya Muungano wa Tanzania.
Samia Hassan Suluhu was born on 27 January 1960 in the Sultanate of Zanzibar. After completing her secondary education in 1977, she was employed by the Ministry of Planning and Development as a clerk. But the mother of four was not done yet. She went back to school and obtained a postgraduate in economics from the University of Manchester in 1994. In the year 2000, Samia Suluhu gave a fast shot at politics. She was elected as a special seat member to the Zanzibar House of Representatives and was appointed a minister by President Amani Karume. She was the only high-ranking female minister in the cabinet. She was re-elected in 2005 and was reappointed as minister in another portfolio. Come 2010, Samia sought election to the National Assembly, vying in the parliamentary constituency of Makunduchi, where she won by more than 80%. She held the position up to the year 2015. She was appointed Minister of State for Union Affairs by President Jakaya Kikwete. In 2014, she was elected as the vice chairperson of the Constituent Assembly, tasked with drafting the country's new constitution. Samia Suluhu's star continued to shine, and in 2015, Chama Pinduzi's presidential candidate, Dr. John Pombe Magufuli, chose her as his running mate for the year's general election.
Kwa hiyo nimeamua tena, Mheshimiwa Samia ndiye awe mgombea mwenza katika kipindi cha miaka mitano.
This made her the first ever female running mate in the party's history. Upon Magufuli's victory in the election, Samia consequently became the first female vice president in the history of United Republic of Tanzania.
Nitaihifadhi, nitailinda na kuitetea katiba ya Jamhuri ya Muungano wa Tanzania iliyowekwa kwa mujibu wa sheria.
According to the Constitution of the United Republic of Tanzania, the Vice President performs the following functions. Number one, assist the President in making a follow-up on the day-to-day implementation of union matters. Number two, perform all duties assigned to him by the President. And number three, perform all duties and functions of the office of the President when the President is out of office or out of the country. Article 37(3) of Tanzania's Constitution states that where the President is absent from the United Republic or is unable to discharge the functions of his office for any other reason, the duties and functions of the President shall be discharged by one of the following in the order specified. That is to say, the Vice President, or if his office is vacant, or if he's also absent or is ill, then the Prime Minister. Article 37(5) further states, where the office of President becomes vacant by reason of death, resignation, loss of electoral qualifications, or inability to perform his functions due to physical infirmity or failure to discharge the duties and functions of the office of President, then the Vice President shall be sworn in and become the President for the unexpired period of the term of 5 years. And in accordance with the conditions set out in Article 40 and after consultation with the political party to which he belongs, the President shall propose the name of the person who shall be Vice President, and such appointment shall be confirmed by the National Assembly by votes of not less than 50% of all the members of Parliament. With the death of President John Pombe Magufuli, and if the Constitution is anything to go by, Samia Hassan Suluhu will find herself assuming the office of the President. Ashley Mazuri, KTN News.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for Mandla this week here on CQUT 90.3 in Montreal. It's been really great that you've been with us. And, well, I'll say good night after pulling the show together for this week.
Thanks so much, Doug. And yes, our listeners have been with us, including incredibly generously through the funding drive. Again, with having raised 1,480, we are floored by it and so appreciative. If you've been thinking about making a donation and haven't yet done it, not too late. Just go on to cqt.ca. You can read about all the gifts and getting into the draw and what the grand prize is for the draw, the whole thing. It's all there at cqt.ca. But anyway, wonderful. We appreciate it so much. We will be back next week. Stay tuned now for Jazz Euphorium.
Come on. This message is intended for all Quebecers. We must take extreme measures to curb the pandemic. Only essential services remain open. Gatherings are prohibited. It's forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. These efforts aim to protect our healthcare workers, seniors, and loved ones. Let's comply with the lockdown and curfew to lower the risk of contracting COVID-19, because our health is important. For more information, visit quebec.ca/confinement. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.